In a world where there is a scourge across the land, taking the very life breath of the people. A world rife with snorting. One man and one show stand tall in the battle against sleep apnea. That man is Richard Webb. That show is the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. And the time is now.
Good morning. I want to thank you for waking up with us, the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show, here on 1560 The Game. Your usual host, Richard Webb, is not here. I am the TJ Yates of the CPAP show. I'm his fill-in here. Hopefully I can do you guys justice this morning. And also in studio, we have with us a friend of the CPAP show, Dr. Tom Spear. Dr. Tom Spear is board certified by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine in treating and diagnosing sleep apnea. When we look at sleep apnea, the CPAP show is devoted to talking about OSA, bringing and raising the awareness of this sleeping disorder, this most common sleeping disorder, OSA. So Dr. Spear is going to be giving us his specialties, telling us information regarding symptoms, treatment options, and also we'll also be talking about what's stopping you from getting a sleep study. You know, most people look at a sleep study and the first thing is we got all these wires. We have to go to a remote location, and we think it's a hospital room, and it's a hospital bed, and we think that we're going to have all of these people over us, and it's an uncomfortable feeling. But a sleep study is not as bad as you think. A sleep study is there to give you what's going on while you're sleeping. Sleeping is the foundation of a healthy lifestyle, and without sleep, our life really gets thrown off of kilter. So without further ado, I want to introduce our guest this morning, Dr. Tom Spear. How are you doing this morning, Dr. Spear?
Very good. Again, thank you for inviting me to come back and share with you and your audience with many of the concerns they have about the quality of their sleeping and probably more important, the quality of their daytime.
Awesome. So give us a call, guys, at 713-439-1560, because we want to pick Dr. Spear's brain. He's the specialist. He has over 25 years of experience in this field. When we look at the godfather of CPAPs, Dr. Colin Sullivan, when he first came out with CPAPs, nobody knew exactly what we were getting ourselves into. Now, 31 years later, this field is just blossoming to this field where more and more people are becoming aware of what sleep apnea is. Sleep apnea is a disorder that is estimated to afflict 20 to 30 million Americans. And of those, about only 10% really get diagnosed. So what I would like to ask you first, Dr. Spear, is why do you think only 10% of the people who have this disorder are really getting treated or even diagnosed for it?
I think that's a very important question to ask, and it's not easy to answer. If it was, I think others would have answered it by now. It's has multiple levels. First of all, many individuals who have a problem breathing and sleeping at the same time, if you will, or what we commonly refer to sleep disordered breathing, or specifically obstructive sleep apnea, see it as almost a normal progression of life itself. We even think historically that snoring was a sign of deeper sleep. You know, we got children snoring now, and it's just annoying. We tend to write it off as being not really important. And I think that has been the point that's brought a lot of people to a point of asking their doctor the question, I don't sleep well, and I think it's this thing called sleep apnea. Because what we've learned that it's highly correlated, and it is a contributing factor to high blood pressure. It's a contributing factor to cardiovascular health. In other words, your heart appreciates oxygen at night, and without the irritation of what sleep apnea can do to the heart rate and its rhythm. We also know that it has a significant impact on people that have a propensity or a likelihood to possibly have a stroke, that they're starting to see that one in leads to the other. Which one comes first is still not completely decided, but heart attacks, strokes, high blood pressure, increased weight, diabetes, are all starting to have a component of their disease, if you will, that it has a it can be better evaluated and treated with looking how well one sleeps. So that has raised the significance. People are paying attention to it. Like you said, I've been at this since 1985, and even my conversations that I've been I've had the honor to have with Dr. Sullivan, you know, his really kind of stumbled into this, and when he was in the intensive care unit as a pulmonologist in Sydney, Australia, they started looking at the airway and had a few cases where they started to see that the airway was collapsing during periods of sleep. And then working with, you know, individuals in the United States, and when we were starting to understand things about that the brain is not a passive process, it's a very active brain during the sleep period. And so, you know, those things were being interrupted, and we didn't really know the differences. We didn't even really know what to measure. You know, we were starting to, you know, see that the eyes were moving, you know, and it became rapid eye movement. And that was correlated with what we call dreaming sleep. So we started finding that the quality of sleep changed when you didn't breathe very well. So, you know, there's a couple things I've said. The brain would rather breathe than sleep. And sometimes it would, you know, some people that don't dream at all, remember any dreams, is another interesting correlation with sleep apnea. The brain will skip dreaming periods because when we go into a dreaming period, we're essentially paralyzed. The upper airway again becomes relaxed again, and it closes off. So the brain says, whoops, don't want to go there. So they skip that dreaming period, and that can lead to irritability, depression, anxiety, less cooperative and interactive with people, things of that sort. We know that emotional health or mental health has a strong relationship with REM sleep.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, 1985, when you said you met, you know, the godfather of CPAPs, you called it one time before on the CPAP show, is, you know, when you met him and you got the honor, you know, to kind of speak with him, and it was still in the embryo stages, so to speak, because it was about 4 years old that CPAPs were there. So talk about how, when you first saw a CPAP machine, how it looked and how much the research was there about the machine compared to the research and the knowledge that we have now about CPAPs and about how much they have changed over the years.
First of all, it was a very cumbersome, fairly loud device. Our biggest challenge with what I refer to as the interface or the mask was not nearly as comfortable, not nearly as tolerable, because it would irritate the skin, or it would, you know, do things of that sort. But the issue that we really weren't able to control with any sophistication was pressure. And really what we're doing with a positive airway pressure device, or a continuous positive airway pressure CPAP, is that we're pneumatically, or with air, opening the airway and keeping it open as you move and change your stages of sleep. So you can breathe in this positive pressure. It's opening up the airway. It's not breathing for you. Your lungs are doing the job. Your diaphragm is still the main trigger mechanism for the breath, and everything seems to work. And early on, we didn't know how much pressure. And so we had to put these, we'd had to actually change a valve, if you will, pull a piece of plastic off the blower device, put another one on, and we had certain ones for certain pressures. And it was very cumbersome to do so. But there again, we were looking at the worst of the worst at that point. And we used to have cutoffs where we didn't even think of doing CPAP treatment unless it was really severe, because we knew that we could correct that to a certain degree.
Wow. So early on, it was just a CPAP machine, continuous positive airway pressure. Now, you know, when I'm doing a setup, I see prescriptions that have different machines on there. There could be a prescription for either a CPAP machine. There can be a prescription for a BiPAP machine. Now we have auto devices that automatically titrate the devices, and even now ASVs, auto servo ventilators. And talk about how that has evolved, so to speak, because back then when Dr. Colin Sullivan started, it was just a basic blower. It just blew air to keep the airway open like a splint to prevent these obstructions. So now talk about that evolution of machines and units, so to speak.
As I understand it, you know, first of all, that's all they could deliver, and they were concerned about how it affected the lungs, and did you put too much pressure in, not enough, did it affect... As it went through the nose, did it affect, you know, the airway and cause some sort of permanent damage? And the fortunate thing is that there is really no clear side effects. You know, the equipment falling off your headboard, hitting your head is probably the most likely side effect of a CPAP machine. It's hard to tolerate, and it was hard to tolerate at first because of the cumbersome of the equipment. Well, it's interesting. Dr. Sullivan continued to research, continued to work in Sydney on developing, and he was at the forefront with another pulmonologist in Australia, Dr. Michael Burthen Jones, who really came up with the auto titrating process, because they decided and they felt that the pressure one needed, which we still believe today, is it changes across the night. It changes from week to week. It changes from month to month. So we had to have a more dynamic piece of equipment that was dynamic with the airway. So he and Dr. Burthen Jones came up with the auto titrating device in addition to bilevel, you know, because sometimes the higher the pressure, the harder it is to breathe out against a column of positive pressure, and the bilevel was brought in to relieve that. Well, the bilevel has grown a great deal since then as well. Now they have auto titrating bilevel devices, which further gives the patient comfort, and we get better results.
See, better results equals a better night's sleep. That's what the CPAP show is about here on 1560. The game is raising the awareness to these different treatment options that are available. It's not just CPAP now. It's autos. There's BiPAPs. There's ways to get you to where you can get a good night's sleep. So stay tuned for after the break. We're going to talk to Dr. Spear about some signs and symptoms of sleep apnea. Welcome back to the CPAP show. Before the break, we were talking about obstructive sleep apnea, CPAP machines, different types of devices. And also, we need to understand the different types of sleep apnea. When you look at sleep apnea, we basically talk about OSA, obstructive sleep apnea, which is the most common type of sleep apnea. It occurs in the soft tissue in the back of your throat, relaxes during sleep. It causes blockage in the airway, which is the apnea, and the snoring, the vibration. But there's also central sleep apnea and complex sleep apnea as well. So these are other things that are important when you go to a sleep study, because these are the things that they can determine what you have, these three different types of sleep apnea. But the most common is OSA. So when you look at OSA, Dr. Spear, what type of signs and symptoms are you looking for in order to say, hey, I may have this disorder?
That's something that, you know, everybody could try to say they have these signs and symptoms, but it's the persistence of them. I think everybody will have some obstructive events from night to night and throughout their lives. If it's worth needing to be treated by whether it be anything from a positive airway pressure device to an oral appliance to surgeries to these pillars things that they do, as well as improving the breathing through the nose, whatever they do choose. The signs, you know, snoring is a good symptom. You know, it's not normal to snore, if you will, but most of us do to one way or the other. We know if we take medications, we know if we don't get enough sleep, if we drink alcohol, we can increase the snoring. Snoring is really the vibration of the tissue in the upper airway. Okay, so that's showing some resistance, it's taking more effort. Ventilation, more effort to breathe, and more you have to make effort to breathe, the brain is going to be affected in the sense of the quality or the depth of sleep will be lighter because the brain rather you breathe. So, you know, I think snoring is one. I think daytime fatigue, waking up with headaches, sweating at night, just not feeling rested when you wake up in the morning. You might find that, you know, as you go through time, the as the afternoon progresses, it's very difficult to keep your eyes open. That's indicative, or that is because you didn't get enough sleep the night before. Now, what caused it? Did you only spend 4 hours in bed, or did you spend 8 hours in bed and toss and turn all night, and you found that, you know, it, no matter what you did, you didn't sleep very well? And then ask other people, you know, did you notice me pausing and breathing? Did you notice that I was hanging my head over the edge of the bed so I could breathe? There's a number of behaviors that people do to take care of it. You know, most people say, I can't sleep on my back. Well, there's lots of reasons you can't sleep on your back, but if you can't breathe very well when you lay down, well, that's, again, an indication to you that something's changing in your breathing, your upper airway, as well as the pressure on your lungs, that it's harder to breathe. Things like high blood pressure, if you've had a small stroke, some people call it TIA, if you've had heart problems, heart arrhythmias, you know, things like that. You just seem not to be able to lose weight where you used to be able to do a fairly common diet and lose some weight. Now you can't. I mean, those are signs that the body is trying to do something differently, and very much a sign that your sleep is not what it once was. And that's why you can do self-evaluation in the sense, you know, I can't concentrate the way I used to. I'm more irritable than I used to, or I'm depressed or anxious. Sometimes it's kind of as free-floating anxiety shows up for things you never thought about. That may be tied back to the quality of your sleep.
Hmm. All right, guys, we're talking with Dr. Spear here about signs and symptoms of sleep apnea, 713-439-1560. Now, you know, it's why do you think also as well, Dr. Spear, people ignore these signs and symptoms of OSA? Is it just easier to kind of sweep it under the rug and just say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and live with it, even if it requires me to move upstairs to the guest bedroom because my wife cannot stand my snoring anymore because she's constantly nudging me in my side. She's becoming an insomniac because she can't sleep because I'm not getting my sleep, but I'm just too prideful to go ahead and get this treated, or I'm just going to ignore the signs and symptoms. Why do you think people do that?
Well, I think denial is a good bit of it. I think I don't want to take the time or the effort because maybe it won't work for me, or maybe it's something else. It's, you know, we don't want to get self-evaluated. And one of the most thorough or long time frame evaluations is a sleep study. We're going to do an evaluation of somebody over a period of 8 to 10 hours. And that's a lot of time to have somebody watching you do something. And a lot of people are averse to that. They're averse to going to a sleep lab. You know, that's where the home sleep studies have come in. I think either one of them gives people pause to say, I'm not sure I'm ready to do this yet. Because it does beg the question. It does say, are you going to do anything about it once you know? And if you've learned to adapt to this rather poor night of sleep, you think I can continue, but it's what we're finding that it's the preventative side of it. If you can prevent certain other medical conditions, would you rather do that? Would you rather have higher quality of life and live longer? If you like those two values, then you might want to consider making sure your sleep quality is better than what you may be accepting, as you will, as a low level. So I'll just avoid it. I'll do it next year.
You know, that's something that's so common, you know, especially with myself. I'm a big procrastinator. I always tell my wife every day, I'm going to put it off to tomorrow, like yesterday. The day before yesterday, she said, well, let's go get a Christmas tree. We got to do the Christmas tree. It's that time of season. I said, well, let's do it tomorrow. Well, we did it yesterday, which was tomorrow to her. Mm-hmm. So after doing that, but also you say that a lot of times it's the sleep test, and your specialty is doing the sleep test, and it's the fear of the unknown, going into the sleep lab, knowing that I'm going to have to be there probably for 2 days, 8 hours each night to be evaluated. Take the fear out of a sleep study, what people, the misconception maybe of the sleep study.
Well, I think they think they have to sleep well. They have to sleep, and really I'd say all you got to do is show up. You don't, there's no performance. You don't have to do anything than you don't do. In fact, I'd rather see the worst night of sleep. And people say, well, I can't sleep in your sleep lab. Well, you might not, but you'll sleep some. And that some and how you sleep in that situation can give me very clear picture of what's going on. I think that, you know, just being away from home that long, what to expect. I mean, you know, all we do is glue things on. We've spent a lot of effort and a lot of money to make the sleep environment in the bedrooms and the sleep centers to look like a hotel or a home-like environment. But, you know, people say, I'm not sure I want somebody watching you. Well, they aren't in the room with you. There's no windows anymore. We got rid of those years ago. We now use video and we use infrared cameras so the room is dark and cool and you have very clear access to a bathroom. You can interact with the technician through an intercom system. It's safe. It's secure. And, you know, you get explained these things. They glue them on. You lay in a bed that's not common, but it's still – most people don't sleep well. We're looking to find a snapshot of what might be indicative because to hold your breath and have your oxygen level drop – as much greater than 4 percentage points or as much as 20-30%, you can't do that when you're awake. If you try, you'll pass out before your oxygen level will drop to that level. It is a function of sleep apnea that the brain and the arousal mechanism is blunted or it's slowed enough that your oxygen level can drop. And that is the repetitiveness of your oxygen dropping because of these pauses in breathing. It causes the brain to get real interested in waking you up.
So you mean to tell me that when I'm sleeping and I have obstructive sleep apnea, it's almost the equivalent of a marathon runner without the exercise because my airway is collapsing, I'm not breathing, my oxygen level is dropping. All of a sudden, my brain sends off this adrenaline to get me to wake up, and this happens repetitively, cycle after cycle, which can be very detrimental to the cardiovascular system. And that is some of the things, some of the consequences of having OSA?
Yeah, the only thing I would differ with your marathon runner is that kind of is a persistent going and they slowly maintain. This is like a shock to you. I mean, it happens 300 or 400 times a night where it's the fight flight response 300 or 400 times where the heart rate goes up, the adrenaline is kicked in there, you breathe faster, all happening within seconds of another. And as the brain is trying to figure out what's going on and the heart's trying to beat faster, your oxygen level is lower, and neither of those organs like low oxygen, so they react to it. And when their reaction to it is where if it can continuously wear that system down, you know, if you make the heart irritable and it has an extra beat and you have low oxygen level, it makes it a little bit more extra beats, and then all of a sudden you got an arrhythmia. And it goes away when you're awake and only shows up at night, and then it shows up during the day, and you know, then, and also your blood pressure goes up at those moments. And so you constantly pump up the blood pressure, it's eventually will stay there. Now, there's other causes of hypertension, but this isn't going to make any of those other go away. So it has a common thread through all those.
You know, it's funny you mentioned about that cardiac arrhythmia. You know, one of the things that we like to talk about here on the CPAP show is Reggie White, because when he was 43, he passed away, and it was noted on his autopsy report that sleep apnea may have contributed to his death. Most recently, we had Chester McLaughlin, who was the assistant coach to the Oakland Raiders. He passed away of a heart attack in his sleep at the age of 42. And the question was posed, did he have obstructive sleep apnea? You know, athletes, it's most common in offensive linemen that they're at a higher risk of OSA because not only of their weight, but also the circumferences of their necks, you know, which is greater than 22 inches. I mean, that's huge. I mean, these guys are paid to be big. So obstructive sleep apnea is something that is prevalent, and the research behind it in relationship to heart attacks is becoming more and more efficient because of the technology that we have today. So stay tuned after the break where I'll pose the question to Dr. Spear, what is the link between heart attacks and obstructive sleep apnea for patients 40 years and older. Welcome back to the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. We'll be taking your phone calls at 713-439-1560. Now, before the break, we were talking a little bit about Chester McLaughlin, passed away recently, this past week. It's it's noted here that throughout his career, he was about 335 pounds. Big guy. I mean, play on that line, and you got to be pretty, pretty big. And he had a lap band surgery, which was able to help him reduce his weight. A lot of people know that some symptoms and some links with OSA is overweight. So for somebody who's overweight, Dr. Spear, and I've been told by my doctor that I have OSA, and I've gone in and I've gone through all the steps of getting a sleep study done, I realized that it isn't as bad as I once thought. I can get up, use the restroom while having these wires, electrodes on my head and belts and monitors. So it isn't as painful as I thought. But now I've gone out and I've started exercising. I've changed up my routine, my diet, and I've lost about 115 pounds. Does that mean that I can get off of my CPAP?
It might, and it might not. I mean, the thing that we have lived with is notion that weight is the biggest reason people have OSA, and it's not. It is an important reason. I'm not sure which comes first, the sleep disordered breathing, the snoring, or the weight. And I think that, you know, there's an open debate. People say, oh, you're crazy. Yeah, it's not even close. But, you know, an individual like McLaughlin had excessive weight. He was aging at a point, and that's another important factor. And again, yeah, you can lose the weight. And many of them, you know, on testing don't have OSA anymore. That's great. That's, you know, I haven't seen many in my practice over the years, but I have seen it. And the key is keeping the weight off as you age, keeping your exercise rhythm going, keeping the amount of sleep you get, and any other kinds of issues that may come to bear. Then you can get off. The question is, why do you want to get off something? Oh, this thing's a horrible thing. Well, there's this perception that that be the case. I haven't had many people that have chronic insomnia asking me, when can I get off my sleep aids? They see that as an important part of their lifestyle now. So it all depends on what you perceive as the benefit. If it really benefits you and you feel good about it and it's comfortable and it doesn't interfere with things at home, then most people stay with it because it is, in fact, a positive experience for them to breathe easier. They feel comfortable with it on. Dealt with some of the obstacles with setting it up and getting a mask and all these kind of, and they see it in interfering with their marital relations. They see that it helps them really get ready for a big important day by making sure they have a good night's sleep. So they are saying to them, it's very positive. But the people that lose weight, if they want to use it as a goal to get off their CPAP machine, go for it. Just be conscientious about that, that it may not always happen. And then at the end of the day, you may say, well, I'm not ready to give it up. Hmm. It's interesting that CPAP users that lose weight, they either fall in love with their CPAP machine and you couldn't pull it out of their hands if you tried. Then there's others, as soon as they hit that magic number that they set as a goal, they're ready to cast it down, you know, as not to be used again. Just be cognizant, just like anything else. You know, you keep taking your blood pressure, keep assessing whether you have sleep apnea. Because, you know, if you look at quality of life and how long you want to live, sleep apnea will affect both of those in a very, very dramatic way.
You lose sleep, you lose days off your life. That is so true. 713-439-1560. We're talking with Dr. Tom Spear here and pertaining to symptoms and treatment options for sleep apnea. You know, the gold standard is CPAP, and something that Dr. Spear said just a minute ago was perception. And that's one of the things that I try to do. I try to change the perception of somebody's outlook on a CPAP machine, because what we think of a CPAP machine is what it started as a big compressor. And it had a valve that you could change the pressure settings. But now we see this evolution of CPAP machines and the evolution of the technology and the mass, etc., where now there's even a product line that's catered specifically to women. It's called the Mirage FX for her, the Quattro FX for her, the Swift FX for her, and now even the AutoPAP for her. So what we're seeing is that the manufacturers that are out there, which are many, they're starting to cater to the people who they're seeing that are getting on CPAP machine. And one thing that I've seen being out in the field for the past 10 years doing this is that I'm not only seeing the older demographic of patients now, I'm seeing more my age, 25 to 35. Also, even younger than that, an 18-year-old or some kids even. And I'm seeing these CPAP machines becoming more and more catering to their styles. For instance, we have a machine out right now that's called the ResMed S9 Elite. The ResMed S9 series is a very popular series because the founder of CPAP machine, these machines were first named after him, the Sullivan series. That's why they have the S series. So now we look at the S9 and we look at the machine, it's in color, where it has color display screens where one of the buttons you can press for a patient, they can see the amount of hours they used it previous. They could even see their AHI, which is an apnea hypopnea index. And one thing that I'm seeing, Dr. Spears, a lot more patients want to become more in tune with their treatment. They want to know what's going on. And the fact that this machine is small, compact, colorful, it's quiet, and now it has a product that's called Skin It, you can apply to it that gives you a decal whether you like the University of Ohio State, like where Dr. Spear went to, or in my case, the University of Texas, who got beat by Baylor yesterday, or the U of H Cougars, who, I'm sorry guys, they're not going to the BCS, but they've had an outstanding season. So we can now make these or disguise these units to look like something that we want it to look like. And I think that plays a big role into perception, because if we can perceive it to be something that belongs there, it's easier to accept the treatment. Because one of the things that I've seen is that a lot of people have a mental barrier to breach rather than a physical barrier. Because when you look at a CPAP machine, Dr. Spear, there's not that much to it now. The masks are very small, the machines are smaller, so it's making it easier to transform that lifestyle from sleeping with OSA to now sleeping with the CPAP machine, which is preventing that OSA from happening.
Exactly. You know, and I think you bring another, you know, the perception issue and your, you know, diligence and your work with your patients as you go into the homes, they visit with you. There's a lot that can be done to adjust the therapy, if you will, that a lot of people just don't get to benefit from, you know, whether it be a change in mask. You know, there is a mask that was going to be comfortable. Pressure is a dynamic issue. You know, we make this big deal about getting a titration night in the sleep lab. We come up with a number, and somehow that's magical and will last for the rest of your life. And that's just naive on our part as clinicians. We need to look at it as a dynamic process that you need to be able to adjust. And you got to find somebody you can work with. They can work with your physician and make adjustments in pressure. And as we've talked over the weeks here on the CPAP show, is humidification. We now know that humidification, not only heating the water at the machine itself, but the heated wall tubings all make it very, very possible to handle the pressure. In fact, we can lower pressure with these kinds of dynamics, but it's not straightforward. You just don't set it at one number and then learn from there. You have to make adjustments. And I think you made an excellent point, and probably we're not very good at this in the sleep field, and it's letting the individual patient know how they're doing from night to night. You know, there's very few things you can do to a CPAP machine that can disrupt the therapy on you. There's very little, you know, you can change the temperature of the humidifier. You can change masks out. You know, you can keep them cleaner. You can do all kinds of things that really makes it yours, just like you change your socks, yeah, or you don't wear socks, or, you know, you change, you know, belts and things like that to make it more comfortable. You need to be able to do that with your own CPAP machine.
Yes, sir. That is so true. You need to get in line and in tune with your treatment, because it's your CPAP machine, it's your therapy, it's your life. Life with CPAP can be effective if we allow it to. So keep it here on 1560 The Game, where we'll continue to talk about treatment options for obstructive sleep apnea, the gold standard in CPAP therapy. And we're back. It's the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show here on 1560 The Game, and we're jamming out. So during the break, let's talk with Dr. Spear, and I got to say, he's got this unique and great item he's got. It's called an UP, and what it is, it's a wrist kind of bracelet that's linked up with his iPhone that gives him a couple of different things. It tells him how many steps he takes during the day, his food intake, and his quality of sleep. Talk about that a little bit, because there's a point I want to get with this. So let's talk about this a little bit. How did you come? Where did you find that?
Well, I got an email or saw it on advertised. You know, it's produced by, and again, we don't have any connection with Jawbone, which, you know, is the headset that people use, the Bluetooth kind of technology. And they came up with it. And there's more than one out tomorrow. I think Nike has one. What it is an actigrapher, or a thing inside it that you wear on your wrist that looks like any of the other wristbands you see. It measures movement. And you can set the number of movements. It can tell the difference between when you're walking versus when you're not walking. It can tell some differences in movement when you're sleeping and not sleeping. And they are proposing, and I haven't confirmed it yet, they can tell the difference if it's light sleep or deep sleep. And I'm still learning that. But what the key is that I think is that you can get instant feedback, you know, every day. You just plug it into your phone or your iPad or whatever, I suppose Droid, you know, all those things. And what it does, it gives you that information. Also, you can share it with others. You can share parts of it with others and develop a community around it, like some of the social networking. I'm not sure how I feel about that at the moment, but the thing is you can gather information and you can set goals. Just like if you want to set a goal, you want to sleep 7 hours a night. Well, it'll help you measure and see how close you are achieving your goal. To integrate this with a CPAP machine would be fantastic. And I've been talking to the manufacturers for years, and they just have not crossed that. Maybe because they're a small company, they can't jump into it. But the point is, and I ask anyone in the audience, if you knew more about how you were doing or not doing and how you're approaching your goals and you could assess it on your own, would that help you?
Exactly. You know, and that's why, you know, one of the things that's important to have as well, it's to have a communication with your sleep provider, that DME company that is setting you up with your CPAP machine. Because one of the things that's very important is to do follow-ups. Like Dr. Spear was saying, you know, we can catch a problem early and we can fix it early rather than letting it prolong and wait and gather up that just inside our head, like it's not going to work. So 2 weeks, 1 month, and 3 months are very important in the patient's compliance and also their therapy. And one of the things that we do with these CPAP machines now, not only can the patient check themselves by pressing a button that allows them to see the previous night, even maybe the past previous month or even week, but now we have little SD cards in the units that can be downloaded. And that's one of the things I try to tell patients in the beginning. It's like, hey, this is a lifestyle modification. So it's going to take some time, it's going to take some practice, and it's definitely going to take some patience to get used to this lifestyle. But one of the things that you can do to give you control over your therapy is come into the office maybe once a month or once every 3 months and bring your SD card in and let us download it. Because what we can do from a download of a CPAP machine is we can tell how many hours you're using the machine, whether or not the mask is having any leaking. If you are wearing a nasal mask that's just over the nose, it can tell us if you're having any mouth breathing problems. And it can also tell us how effective the pressure is, so that if anything needs to be changed, we can address those issues. And if we can address them quicker and sooner, then the compliance rate and the probability of somebody accepting the therapy goes up in that beginning.
And then the benefits that we keep selling on here, that, you know, you'll have less medical consequences for taking care of your sleep apnea. I think you're right. I think the thing that you know, getting people to come back, you know, I think the heart of my practice is dealing with people that have already had a sleep study, already have tried CPAP and haven't succeeded, but they feel that they need to because of their other medical problems, like we said, cardiac arrhythmias, or they've had a stroke, they don't want a repeat of that, and they say, who can help me do that? And it's more than just equipment. It's looking at the sleep behaviors and understanding the other medical issues and medications. That is what I've been trying to develop, and I think there's things we can do. I mean, I haven't found somebody that's motivated, I'll underline motivated, that I can't get to the point that they're utilizing their therapy on a nightly basis and find it workable. It takes time, and there, you just have to have some experience in doing so. But I think the feedback is so critical in the SD cards and all the things we get from a CPAP machine. are locked in our computers and not theirs, and access it to them has always been a difficult process, and to have them come in just to download is a great idea, but I tell you, I find a lot of people spent 6 months to a year finally making it into the office to find out that it's not working. And I say, well, you're only wearing it till 3 o'clock in the morning. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, what happens? Well, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Well, let's try this. And it's usually one or two simple things we can do that they hadn't thought of. And that's why we do what we do every day, is that we think of these things. And I think therein lies the benefit of it. And so it's like anything else. You know, you don't get a pair of glasses and wear them for 10 years or 5 years or beyond 2 years and expect that you can see the same way. Everything changes. And we just haven't built that into our model. And the physicians that sometimes look at you like, what do you want me to go back to the DME company? And the DME company says, well, I can't change that because that's only the doctor can change it. So the patient gets caught between the two, and they basically say, forget it.
Exactly. You know, that's so true. And not only the feedback from the patient, but also research. You know, we live in a media and a World Wide Web society. I mean, everything you want to know can be found on the internet, whether it's good or bad. And I consider myself to be a student of sleep apnea, so I'm always researching these different things about OSA, and I'm finding all these different articles. And I tell my patients, you know, if you can't find information at our website at monitormedical.com, you can go on online and research things, and there's even blogs for CPAP therapy where patients are expressing their different problems, their different maybe concerns in the beginning stages of CPAP therapy, because, again, it's a lifestyle modification, and it does take time and practice to get used to it. But if you're informed and you give feedback to your maybe the DME company, where we can say, you know, hey, well, I'm having a trouble adjusting to this pressure that the doctor has prescribed to me. Is there any other options? This way we can inform the patients that, yes, there may be other options, such as an auto titration or an auto device. So what is your stance between CPAP and auto? When do you find it necessary to convert a patient from a CPAP machine to an auto positive pressure device?
I think that anytime you have variable needs and pressure demands, that's a fancy way of saying when you go into dreaming sleep, you need more pressure than you do when you're not in dreaming sleep, or when you roll on your back, or that you, certain periods of the year you need medications for allergies and it makes you drowsy. Those are times where an auto-titrating device will automatically shift and you'll get optimal, or at least the most optimal therapy at that point. You know, and then it begs, why don't we just start with that? Well, that's a good question. We've had these auto-titrating devices around since the mid-90s. I mean, that's 15 years, and its adaptation or the amount of people prescribed them is not as nearly as many as I think they could be, but there was a difference in price. Well, now the price doesn't seem to be that big of a deal. But the ability to adjust them, to make them work, is a new mindset for many of the physicians. So I think I start everybody that I work with on some sort of an auto-titrating device. I can make an auto-titrating device a standard device. I can jump in between the two. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, and the cost is an issue. There's no question the cost is an issue, but I think the cost is becoming less of an issue even to insurance companies. And there's a little bit of, you know, there's from an insurance company's perspective, there's no difference between the two.
All righty. Thank you, Dr. Thomas Spear, for joining us. For you guys who have questions for Dr. Tom Spear, he can be found at the Personal Physician Group, LLP, which is located at 4100 South Shepherd Drive, Houston, Texas, 77098, 713-524-9800. We want to thank you guys for listening to another great Sunday edition of the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. Remember, if you have questions, please email those questions to the CPAP Show at monitormedical.com. Enjoy the day. Let's see what TJA's got.